big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, our first guest of the week has written an astonishing true story of one of the most gripping maritime sagas of the 19th century. Here to tell us about his latest book, The Wreck of the Mentor, welcome to the show, Eric J. Dolan.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So I know we're going back to 1832. What was this all about then? Why was it a shipwreck?
Well, The Wreck of the Mentor is, this, as you mentioned, a wild and true story. It's about a whale ship that left New Bedford, Massachusetts in July of 1832, and it wrecked off of a reef off of the archipelago of Palau, which is about 500 miles to the east of the Philippines. Within a day of wrecking, half of the men on board, 11 men, are dead. And that is just the beginning of the story. Over the next 4 years, there are a whole bunch of things that happen. There are vicious attacks. There are displays of kindness and compassion, desperate open ocean voyage, multiple escapes, periods of starvation, a murder, fraught negotiations, and forced tattooing of some of the whalemen. And finally, there's a naval rescue mission that was sent by President Andrew Jackson. In the end, only 7 out of 22 men make it back to the United States, and some of them were in Palau for nearly 4 years. It's just, it was a lot of fun writing. It's a wild story.
Yeah,
almost
it
improbable.
It sounds it. So presumably the 11 that did survive, because they were in the archipelago of Palau, it was the indigenous people there that were forcing tattoos and things?
Yes, there are multiple islands that are involved. At first, the men are attacked by the first Palauans that they meet and viciously beaten. They escape. They land on another island. They're greeted by another group of Palauans in a different village. At first, they're treated quite horribly. But once the Palauans figure out that they're Americans and not British, they're treated better. And the reason for that is about 50 years earlier, a British bark named the Antelope crashed in Palau in a different village, and they were given permission by the chiefs there to build a ship out of the salvage from the wrecked Antelope and to escape. But in exchange, basically, the British gave the Palauans arms and ammunition and even went to war with that village against other villages, and more guns and ammunition were delivered later after the men of the Antelope got back to England. So this was sort of a precedent where the village where the Antelope crashed, Koror, became the leading village in Palau. There are a bunch of villages with different spheres of influence. They became the leading village because of this firepower provided by the British. And one of the villages that they vanquished back in 1783 was Ngarshalong, where the Americans ended up. So the Ngarshalongese wanted to know, are you British? Because if you are, you're our enemies. You empowered the other tribe to attack us. But once they determined they were Americans, and they had no idea what America was, but they just knew that they weren't British, they welcomed them, and they made a similar deal. They said, okay, we'll help you build a ship. And ultimately, they built a canoe for them to escape. But you've got to come back and bring us 200 guns, ammunition, flints, and balls, because they wanted to have the same power that the village of Koror was given many years prior. And when the Americans left, the Americans did leave that village. They had to leave three of their men behind as hostages so that they would return. But the tattooing took place on a whole other island. When they escaped, they went off course. They landed on another island of Tobi, which is part of Palau today, but wasn't back then. Here, the natives were much more aggressive. It was a much smaller island, and the Americans started to die there of starvation. Some were murdered. And after being there for so many years, the locals decided to tattoo the men, because they were basically part of the community, and all of the Palauans, all the Tobians and all the Palauans were heavily tattooed.
Crikey. It sounds like something of fiction, doesn't it?
Well, the best I've always felt, this is my 17th book, I've always written nonfiction. I think the best nonfiction is as good or better than any fiction, because people get into amazing situations.
Yeah, indeed. So I'm trying to work it out then. So there are 22, 11 died, which leaves 11. So was it 8 men that escaped on a canoe? And did they manage
yes.
to do that? Yeah. Wow.
Yes, they escaped, and they ultimately made it to Tobi. But over the subsequent years, two of them escaped on a passing ship. Then that left 6. And then 4 of them died of starvation. One was killed. So there are only 2 Americans left. And there was 1 Palauan, because when they escaped from Engarshalan, not only did the Americans, the whalemen, go, but they also brought 3 Engarshalangese with them to learn about the wider world. And after a couple of years, 2 out of those 3 had died. So on Tobi, there are only 2 Americans left, 1 Engarshalangese or Palauan. And finally, those 2 Americans, they escaped on another ship that came by, a British ship, the Britannia, that came by and picked them up. And they finally make it back to the United States. And while they're heading back to the United States, there is already a naval rescue mission that had been sent by President Andrew Jackson to collect the Americans on Palau and on Tobi, and also return the Engarshalangese, who were taken to Tobi, back to their home village. So it's just a fascinating sequence of events.
And what about the hostages? Were they ever...
Yeah, they were. Well, one of them escaped on a passing ship. That seems to be a common theme.
Yeah.
This is Palau is outside of the normal trading routes, but occasionally ships would come by, and one of the Americans managed to get into a canoe and make contact with the ship that was passing by, and they were picked up, and they made it back to the United. He made it back to the United States. There were 2 more Americans there, and yes, the naval rescue mission nearly had to fight the Engarshalangese to get the Americans back. But it was a complicated set of negotiations. Finally, an agreement was reached, and those 2 Americans were repatriated, were taken by the USS Vincennes, the American warship, and they were brought back to the United States.
So out of the couple, and we dwindled it down to something like 2 that did survive, did they live to a ripe old age? Have you managed to sort of get in touch with their grandchildren or great-grandchildren or anything?
Yes. Well, one of the difficult things about writing about mariners, especially mariners before the mast, the working men on ships like this, is they don't leave much of an historical record. However, for the of the 7 that survived, 2 really had a good historical record. And one of them was one of the last men, Horace Holden. He was there with 1 other man, Newt Rollins, and they did not, Newt, we don't have much information about, but Horace Holden lived to be 94 years old.
Wow.
He came back to Hawaii. He was one of the first Americans in Hawaii. Then he went to Oregon. He helped to settle Oregon, and he was a farmer out there, and he was heavily tattooed, and he wrote a book about his experience when he came back. He was heavily tattooed. He never showed his tattoos to anybody but his family and a couple of reporters. And he lived a relatively quiet life, but when he was about ready, when he was about 100, when he was about 92, in 1900, roughly, a lot of articles came out about him, because not only was he very old, but he had a great story to tell. And those articles actually were part of the story that I tell at the end in the epilogue. So he had the most interesting life of all. The captain of the whale ship, Mentor, he came back to America. And believe it or not, after this experience, he went out on another whaling voyage.
Oh, my Lord.
And then he came back and he was the captain of a ship on Lake Erie, one of our great lakes. And unfortunately, a storm sank the ship. And he was lost along with all the other men.
And is that what happened, Derek, in the first place? I mean, why did it crash? Was it the conditions when it happened?
Yes, they were on the Spice Islands. They were heading from the Indian Ocean all the way across into the Pacific Ocean. They were going there to try to hunt sperm whales, which are the most valuable whales of all. And after they left the Spice Islands, a storm blew in and they couldn't see the stars. So celestial navigation was out. They did have other forms of navigation. And Captain Barnard, who was an experienced sailor, thought, based on dead reckoning and using his compass and other mechanisms, he thought that he was way out in open water, probably hundreds of miles from any land. And anybody who's looked at a map in this part of the world, there are a lot of little islands all over the place. But he thought he was safe and in deep water, and he could survive this storm. But unfortunately, a little after midnight on May 21st of 1832, he found out that he was really wrong. The ship crashed into a reef off the northern edge of Palau, and the huge hole in the hull meant that there was no refloating the ship. That was the end of the ship. And this is a common story in maritime tales, not just maritime tales, any historical tales, that small changes one direction or another can have huge impacts. They crashed on the very northernmost tip of Palau, which is an archipelago of 340 islands. If they had just sailed a mile or two north, they would have missed the reef easily, and they would have made it to their intended destination, Guam. So unfortunately, they crashed, and that was the beginning of this wild story.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention a compass. Of course, we've got far more sophisticated navigation technology nowadays, and they just had a compass, I guess.
Yeah, the compass. Well, they had sextant. But that you can only use if, you know, you can see the sky or the sun. So it was limited navigational tools available. But keep in mind, even today, with our sophisticated radar, GPS and all sorts of things, there are still crashes of ships out in the ocean, especially during storms. I mean, bad decisions are made, mistaken assumptions. So there were hundreds at this time. In 1831, New Bedford was the leading whaling port in the United States. Over 700 whaling ships left during that year on whaling voyages. Most of them made it back home. The Mentor didn't. So this was a risk that whalemen undertook. They knew that they might not get back home. And shipwrecks were an unusual but not a unique experience. But it was just part of the risk of going out beyond the land when you have to rely entirely on yourself and your sailing abilities and the ship.
Yeah, for sure. And Eric, you mentioned that you've written 17 books now. Are they all about the sea, about maritime?
Most of them. I've written books on pirates, on hurricanes, on the China trade, on privateering during the American Revolution. I wrote another book called Left for Dead, which might have some interest to you because it takes place in the Falkland Islands. It's about five men who are intentionally marooned on the Falkland Islands during the War of 1812. I wrote a book about whaling. So most of my books are maritime related. I live here in Marblehead, Massachusetts, which is right on the edge of the ocean on the East Coast, one of our oldest towns, founded in 1629. And I just have always loved the ocean and stories about it, and also stories about animals in the ocean. I really have a part of my background is environmental and nature.
Ah, that explains it. That explains it. Well, the book for our listeners is called The Wreck of the Mentor, A True Story of Death, Despair and Deliverance in the Age of Sail. It's by Eric J. Dolan, who we're speaking to now, and a believe it's not out until July. Is that correct?
Yes, in England, in America, here it's out on June 2nd. There was just a big review of it in the Wall Street Journal two days ago. But it doesn't come out in England, yes, until July. There's a slight delay there.
Okay. Well, we're in Spain, so I guess people should just
check.
That's okay. It doesn't matter. I'm speaking English. I can understand why it's three. But if people can just check, can't they? Do you have a website? Maybe that would be easy.
Oh, yeah.
People.
Yeah. That's probably the best thing, because on my website, every single one of my books is on the website, and every single introduction for my books is on the website. So you can read the introduction to The Wreck of the Mentor, and it's just my name. It's www.ericjdolin, ericjaydolin, not A-N, .com. And there you can find information about the book. You can also see some of the reviews that have come out already. And if you happen to be in the United States, you can see where I'm speaking in the next couple of months.
even better. Well, thank you, Eric, for your time. It's fascinating stuff. And do let us know when you have an 18th book out.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Take care. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.